gosh, you know, if those people had had somebody like me in their life, or maybe a resource that could help them navigate this process, maybe their outcome and their story would have been different.
720 WGN and the Preparedness Matters podcast with Vince Davis and Danielle on the line. Excited to have the author of one of the most significant books and resources on recovery and restoration, consultant, contractor, industry expert, and author of The Red Guide to Disaster Recovery, the one and only Sean Scott. Welcome to WGN. Welcome to Preparedness Matters.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Sean, how are you doing today? Before we start, I just want to give the listeners some transparency here. You and I have been great friends and colleagues for a number of years now. We met in San Diego when I was working with Sony, and we've been fast friends ever since then. How are you, and how's things out in San Diego?
Well, things are great. You know, I mean, I've just been, you know, working on helping people currently over in Boulder, Colorado through their wildfire recovery process. And, it's just overwhelming, you know, whether it's a tornado in Kentucky or a hurricane in Louisiana. I mean, the need for information after disasters never ends. And so I'm constantly busy, you know, helping people through that process. Even if it's just a pipe that burst under somebody's sink, it's still that whole process that's a mirror of what somebody goes through in a, you know, a large scale disaster. So yeah, things are good. I mean, feeling great to be able to help people out. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of it.
Well, thanks for getting into that. And look, you're probably one of the busiest people I know, because no matter what's going on in the world, there's always a disaster in somebody's kitchen or neighborhood or bathroom or something. So glad to have you on.
I mean, it goes from a broken pipe to like a wildfire that'll take out an entire community. And you wrote the book a number of years ago, but it is even more relevant and needed today. And so not everybody has a book in them. A lot of people think, well, what would it take for me to write a book? And sort of that inspiration, obviously it's part of your professional career and the industry that you work in, but talk a little bit about the book, the resource guide, and what was the inspiration to go ahead and take what it is that you knew and what you saw and put it on paper?
Well, so, I mean, I'm not an author, you know, or writer by trade. To be honest with you, they kicked me out of high school in the middle of 11th grade. So I was the last guy qualified to write a book about anything. But something happened in 2007 that changed the course. In 2003 and 2007, San Diego and County in Southern California had experienced tremendously devastating wildfires. One was the Cedar Fire, and the other was the Witch Creek and Harris fires. In those two different seasons of wildfires, we lost close to 5,000 homes and tens of thousands that were partially damaged or smoke damaged. And so, as a result, one of the homes that burned down in 2007 was a dear friend of mine, and he had been out of town on vacation and comes back to 6 inches of ash. And so he calls me and says, hey, Sean, can you help me? We've just lost everything. So I go out to his home and we're sifting through the ash to try to find his, you know, wife's wedding ring. And literally, I mean, there was nothing salvageable. And so, you know, fast forward, you know, helped him through the insurance process, helped him through, you know, initial demolition and, you know, the first steps with dealing with the insurance adjusters and stuff. And then 18 months later, rebuilt his home, and he called me up and said, hey, Sean, love to have you come out. We're having a housewarming party and we're all back in and everything is great. So my wife and I are driving through the neighborhood and we're looking after 18 months, and we realized that theirs was the only house rebuilt in the entire neighborhood for a year and a half, and all the rest of the houses were destroyed. And so I asked him, I said, now what happened to your neighbors? And he said, well, the neighbor on my left got into a fight with their insurance company, lost their home and moved away. And to this day, it's a vacant lot. And he said, the neighbor on my right committed suicide. And when I heard that story, it was like my heart broke. I thought, gosh, you know, if those people had had somebody like me in their life, or maybe a resource that could help them navigate this process, maybe their outcome and their story would have been different. And that's what compelled me instantly to start jotting down notes of like, what from beginning to end, what does somebody need to know to successfully navigate this process? And I literally woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning for about 6 months and wrote from 2 to 7 and just put everything in sequential order of what you need to know the moment the fire truck leaves the curb to getting handed the keys to a brand new home. And yeah, so that was sort of the story behind why the book was written. So then wrote it, and then I printed 12 copies and presented them to our County Fire Chiefs Association. And I just said, guys, if I could find a funding source for this book, would you give it to people for free who, you know, suffered a loss of their home? And a couple months later, I get a call and they said, we absolutely love it. And if you can find, you know, funding, we'll put it on every fire truck. Well, they ended up finding funding through the Department of Homeland Security, the Red Cross, and our local utility. And now it's on every fire truck in the county. Well, then it went to the governor's office of emergency management, called me and said, we want it in all 58 counties. And then it went national.
Wow.
So yeah, that's sort of the story behind why the, you know, Red Guide Recovery was created.
And Sean, it's still relevant even today, more relevant because of the number of disasters that we're having and the frequency of disasters. Whether you believe it's due to global warming or the zombie apocalypse, it doesn't matter. The reality is that we're having more disasters more often, and they're more devastating to people than ever before. Wouldn't you agree?
100%. And not to mention, you know, the National Fire Prevention Association talks about the statistics that there's somewhere close to over 400,000 residential structure fires in the United States every year. So on a single family basis, that's a tremendous amount of loss, you know, just on the norm. Not to mention, you know, when a hurricane or a ice storm or a wildfire strikes, you know, now you've got a wide scale disaster that compounds the loss of homes on a just a tremendous level. So yeah, the need is there. It seems to be that the need is getting more intense because people are becoming victimized a lot easier. You know, you notice like every time there's a major disaster event, there's all these charities that pop up, and most people don't know if they're legit or not, but they get built, you know, millions and millions of dollars donated to, you know, help a situation, and nobody really thinks to take that next step to check them out.
So let the listeners know we're talking with Sean Scotty. He is the author of The Red Guide to Disaster Recovery. I love those stories, and I know Vince does too, where there's people out there, individuals that make things happen that would never happen otherwise, but you've got to look at it. And it's kind of crazy, right, that you had to get in, and this wasn't necessarily your normal wheelhouse of activity, and you had to do that. Why do you think that there wasn't a resource like this? And of course, yours is very comprehensive and has a bunch of different scenarios within it. But why do you think it wasn't done before you got involved?
Well, I don't know that people realize that there was actually a need. You know, FEMA puts out a book called After the Fire, I think it's called. And it's about, I don't know, maybe 20 pages of just your basic, you know, information that's really next to useless when it comes to recovery. I mean, so, you know, I realized that, you know, there wasn't any information out there compiled in a single source. I mean, when you go to a disaster recovery center, you know, or local assistance center after disaster, there's all these 6-foot tables that are, you know, there's information from the SBA and the Red Cross and FEMA and, you know, insurance companies have a presence. People, I was seeing them just loading all these brochures and pamphlets into paper bags and taking them home, trying to figure out how to organize all this and what applies to me and what doesn't. So I just thought, you know, we need to organize this and make it easy to read and understand and pertinent. You know, a lot of the information that they present after disasters is more so for public safety officials than it is for the actual resident.
So, Sean, I wanted to ask you about this because I know that, of course, through my travels with you, you have a standard edition of the Red Guide. You also have a Native American and Alaska Native version, and you also have printed the book in Spanish language. Tell us about the Native American version and why that's important.
Well, so in San Diego County, we have a number of recognized tribes, and they were the hardest hit after these wildfires because they live in that urban wildland interface. And so being in those communities, you know, it's hard to get resources logistically to them. They're recognized as sovereign nations. And so you don't just go walking into their reservation land and tell them, hey, we're here. They have specific rituals and rules and regulations and different dynamics than we do living in just normal society. So I saw that there was a need for there to be a specific version for tribes so that it was applicable to their living situation. You know, they have tribal councils, they have housing authorities, they have sacred sites. We consider a sacred site to us would be like church. Well, a lot of tribes have burial grounds or other areas on their lands where they're sacred to them. And so without knowing those types of dynamics, first responders or relief organizations could inadvertently offend, you know, or do something that could really be bad for relations and the community. So just felt like there needed to be something specific for our native peoples.
So culturally relevant, really, is what you're talking about. So, Sean, tell me a little bit about what's in the book. On an overall basis, of course, I know I consider this to be the source about what to do after a disaster. Give me an overview of what's in the book. What kinds of things are people going to find in there?
Well, I wrote it in such a fashion so that the first chapter was basically the first thing that you typically face immediately after the event takes place, and that's emergency services and repairs. It talks about boarding up your home or putting roof tarp, you know, securing utilities and avoiding scams. So the vultures and the predators are on the doorstep the second that fire truck leaves the scene. So there's some information about how to recognize opportunists, what to do, what not to do. And then after that, there's displacement and relocation, disaster relief and financial assistance, you know, a whole section on insurance. What do you do about your personal property? And then I have, you know, chapters on fire damage, smoke damage, water damage, how to do estimating and their safety. And then there's a whole section on how to avoid disaster scams. So that's just a sort of a brief overview of some of the content, but it's packed with a lot of good information in over 200 pages. And, you know, every year I find something new to put in it. So it's like a living doc, keeps evolving as time goes.
Disaster situation isn't something that anybody looks forward to. In fact, they probably avoid it in a lot of situations and hope that they never have to think about it. And then it lands on them and they're in that situation. Through the conversation, you've mentioned insurance a couple times. And typically that's what people say, like, well, I'll just pay my homeowner's insurance or I'll just pay insurance related to this. And then if it happens, they'll just take care of it. But it isn't always the case. And oftentimes it's kind of mysterious. You mentioned on the inspiration for the book, I'm sure that was part of it, is they either got in a fight with their insurance company, the insurance company wouldn't pay for it. And then all of the negative things kind of steamroll from there. So talk about insurance as a whole, and we love all the great commercials. I think some of the funniest commercials out there that have nothing to do with insurance are from insurance companies, you know, whether it's the Lizard or Flo or, you know, the Emu guy. I mean, I love them.
Right.
But the thing is I think we have to realize, right, you know, as great as insurance can be, and it can be, it's essential. But their whole goal is to try to pay for as few things as possible, right? That's the business model.
Well, I mean, it is a for-profit entity, so if they can pay the minimal amount to, you know, get out of the claim, they will. But, you know, a lot of it has to do with the actual boots-on-the-ground adjuster. So you could have an adjuster from an insurance company who's an absolute angel that's just helping you take advantage of all the what's afforded in your policy to make you whole and, you know, even maybe giving you a little extra here and there. And then you're on your way. That's kind of the spirit, in my belief, that insurance should be, is, you know, do what you can to get people back in their homes. Now, then there's the other types of adjusters out there who think that pinching pennies and cutting corners and lowballing is the way to success, you know, and moving up the chain in the insurance world. If you get one of those, then, you know, you may need hire a public adjuster or an attorney to where you start running into some issues. So just kind of depends on who you get that's going to help you with your claim.
So, Sean, give us an example. I know there was one that you and I talked about some years ago about a roofing situation where somebody had a roof blown off during a storm, and the roof was a specialty type roof, and they got undercut by the adjuster, and it wound up costing them tens of thousands more. Tell us an example of how these things might work.
Well, so to give you an example, I recently had a fire loss where I was involved, and an insurance adjuster came out from Texas, and this gal, you know, wrote up an estimate. This was a pretty severe fire, the garage fire, and her estimate was about $125,000 to, you know, repair this home. And so I went through her estimate, and then I put together what is called a supplemental estimate, which is an estimate that just includes items that were missed or undervalued in the adjuster's estimate. And about 3 or 4 months later, after, you know, fighting back and forth, the insurance company wrote a check for about $680,000. That's a massive difference.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, I typically don't give much value to estimates written by adjusters because they never built homes or restored homes. So they don't really have hands-on knowledge of how things are built. And so it's going to be to the insured's disadvantage to a certain degree, just by design, that, you know, you got somebody coming out there telling you what it's going to cost to rebuild your house when they have no professional basis for that estimate.
Now, Sean, you're the expert's expert. You've testified in court trials as an expert witness on repair and restoration. Tell us a little bit about that, if you can.
Well, and it shouldn't go there. You know, I mean, some cases, you know, you end up in court fighting an insurance company to be made whole. And I have to basically stand in as an expert and explain, you know, line by line, why things cost what they cost, what a contractor needs to be able to make a profit and survive in this industry. It's a sad situation, because if somebody has to go to court, now keep this in mind, and I want to really, really emphasize this. In your insurance policies, you have a certain time frame. It's called additional living expenses, where you can be displaced from your home and the insurance company will pay for it. It's usually a year to 2 years. But if you get embroiled into a lawsuit and you can't rebuild your house and that clock runs out, now you're faced paying your mortgage and your rent. And for people on a limited income, that can break you. That can make you go bankrupt and you lose your home completely. So any delaying tactics that are used by some insurance companies to, you know, drag you into court and fight you can just be a ploy to force you into submission financially.
Wow. That's pretty incredible, pretty powerful stuff. I hope our listeners are jotting this down, because I think most people, I certainly didn't know that, wasn't aware of that. What can you tell us about FEMA? People think when there's this big major disaster, hurricane, tornado, and FEMA is involved, it rises to the level of a FEMA declaration, that they're going to get these huge checks. What can you tell us about that?
Well, before we jump to that, let me add one last caveat to that last statement. So let me just say that your insurance policy is your recovery lifeline. If after you hear, you know, this podcast, go pull out your homeowner's insurance policy or your renter's policy, read it, and make sure you have enough coverage if your home burns to the ground. So just want to put that out there to the listeners. So about FEMA, people think that FEMA is a relief organization, when in reality, you know, I think the maximum they can pay out for individual assistance is about $34,000, something in that range. So it's not really going to do a whole heck of a lot if your house is half destroyed or blown away completely by a tornado. So
it's not going to rebuild your house if it gets blown away by a tornado or a hurricane.
No, it's going to do next to nothing. So it's, you know, it's incumbent on people to have good insurance. It's one of those costs that you just can't overlook, because if you lose your home and you have to start, you know, your life over somewhere else, I mean, it could be catastrophic.
Let the listeners know we're talking with Sean Scott. He is the author of The Red Guide to Disaster Recovery, and that is part of, I think, the problem. It's part of the reason why we're doing this podcast, Preparedness Matters podcast, is because there is this public perception that maybe FEMA will ride in and save everybody, and that there's huge checks given out and that everybody's house will be restored. And it just isn't the case. And so there's a lot of things that people think, okay, well, preparedness and disaster recovery doesn't necessarily apply to me, but it does, right? Because, and Sean, talk a little bit about this. We're going to have you as a recurring guest on the program. You know, there's more and more things happening all over the place. And so what are some of the different disasters that you're getting more and more input and feedback on, and where, you know, people are reaching out and saying, hey, Sean, I need some help?
Well, every time that there is a wide-scale disaster, like currently I'm helping folks in Boulder, Colorado after the wildfire. I mean, whether it's tornado, hailstorms, I mean, it's often just a single structure fire, you know, in the Midwest or somewhere where someone found my website and they just need answers. So I get calls every week about, you know, everything from gas explosions to, you know, a tree that falls over from a windstorm and splits a house in half. I mean, there are so many different scenarios, you know, cars, drunk drivers who make drive-throughs through people's living rooms. I mean, it's endless.
And Sean, what do you say to that? Because you say, like, hey, read the book. And of course, we'll have links up at WGNradio.com and at the Preparedness Matters podcast site. Do you have time to take these calls, or do you just blurt out, hey, it's on page, you know, 175?
No, you know, to be honest, Dan, I really try to my best. If somebody goes through the effort to find my phone number, my email, and they need help, I'll call them. I'll personally call them, spend a little time on the phone with them, try to point them to some resources. And I don't try pushing the book. That, you know, they know it's there, but, you know, people just are in that psychologically compromised place where they need somebody they can trust who's not out to make money on them. So I do try to help them out when I can. But I'd like to, can I share with you just a personal story of what ties all of this together?
Sure.
Yeah, so years ago, I can tell Vince this is about Harold. My daughter, he's about 11 years old. My wife went out of town and she was like, you know, Dad, can we go to the pet store? So I was like, oh, sure. You know, why not? We're just going to go, you know, look, we're not going to buy anything. You know, she's, oh, that's perfect. So I go and we go to the pet store. And the first thing she sees is this desert tortoise, you know, it probably weighed about, I don't know, 10 pounds. And she's just like, please, Dad, you know, I just got to have this tortoise. You know, this is the most amazing thing in the world. Meanwhile, you know, I'm like, well, let's go look at these little baby ones, the ones that are like 2 inches long. Well, as I'm looking, I realize that there's two of them that are turned upside down in their water dish, you know, in the little aquarium. So I ran over to the cashier and I said, hey, man, you know, you got to get somebody back here because your turtles are upside down. And the guy said, well, you know, did you see the sign on the window of the aquarium? I said, well, no. He goes, well, go read it. He's kind of rude. So I just, you know, went over and sure enough, it said, don't fear when you see the turtles turned upside down, because when they're small, they learn how to flip themselves over so that when they're really big, they know what to do. Well, so long story short, we end up buying this tortoise, this 10-pound tortoise, and named him Harold. And one day I'm out in the backyard and I see Harold upside down and he's just like frozen. I thought he was dead and he'd somehow gotten upside down. And I realized at that moment when I walked up close to him, you know, he was alive and I turned him over, but his whole life growing up, somebody turned him over. When his life was upside down, there was somebody to rescue him. He never learned how to fend for himself, how to recover on his own. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is like a God moment. This is exactly what happens to people in disasters. They get flipped upside down. They've never been through it before. They don't know what to do. And they just expect somebody to come and make their life right for them. And it doesn't happen. And so that tortoise, you know, taught me a lot in that scenario.
You got the life lessons from Harold, and these are words to live by, right? And words to flip over by, right? And be prepared and know, right. Know what to do when those situations happen to you, because the thing that we all know is that we don't know, right? Then it could happen at any point. So, Sean, before we let you go, give the website out for people to get more information, get in contact with you, social media-wise, sure. Right? Maybe for people to follow some of the adventures and stay in touch.
Yeah, so my website is www.theredguidetorecovery.com. And I'm on Facebook, and I'm also on LinkedIn, just under Sean Scott. Facebook, it's The Red Guide to Recovery. So, yeah, lots of good free tools, tons of free articles that I've written on there that will help with preparedness and recovery. So I'm just very blessed that you guys let me be on your show today.
Sean, thank you, my dear friend, for blessing us with your knowledge and your expertise. I hope our listeners are hearing you and they will reach out and figure out how to get more prepared.
Oh, thank you. Well, Vince, you know, you're the best.
Yes. Yes, he is. Sean, thanks so much for being on Preparedness Matters.
Thanks, Dane.
Preparedness Matters is sponsored by In Case of Crisis 365, your solution to managing the dramatic rise in business disruptions. Take the crisis out of crisis management.